Welcome to Now You Know. I'm Catherine Sussman. Today I'm talking to Dr. Lori Marino, neuroscientist and founder of the Camela Center for Animal Advocacy. Hi, Lori. Thank you so much for letting me interview you today.
Thank you.
And yeah, I'm really excited to be talking to you about the subject of dissection because I think it's something that we don't usually hear about a lot.
Yes.
So if you don't mind, could you just tell me a bit about what dissection is?
Sure. Dissection is really the practice of anatomically cutting up a dead animal. It's usually frogs, but it could be fetal pigs, fish, rabbits, dogs, cats, worms, rats, mice, anyone. And we normally come into contact with dissection in school from early on. Children are often asked to dissect fetal pigs or rats or earthworms as part of their science education. And that goes into high school. And then in college, science majors are asked to do similar dissections. And of course, in veterinary school, students are also traditionally asked to do dissections of dogs and cats and other animals. So it's something that's pervasive in our society.
I live in Canada and I grew up here in Canada. And I think we started dissecting, I'm sure it was in junior high. So I think it was grade 7 when we first had to, when we first encountered dead animals in the classroom, usually in jars, that kind of thing.
Yes.
And then the dissection started. I remember being in grade 11 and the teacher wanting us to, it was part of the unit, we were forced to dissect and I refused to do it. And as a result, I ended up having to drop out of grade 11 biology and I never continued on in the sciences for that reason.
Oh my gosh. I mean, when you think about that, that's just horrific that, you know, you felt at that age that you had to give up what you wanted to study because you didn't want to cut up an animal. I remember getting fetal pigs when I was in sixth grade, and I did participate in the dissection, but I didn't feel good about it. And later on, began to think about, well, where does this poor little pig come from? And, you know, the fetal pigs, they come from factory farming, and they're just bred for that purpose. But unfortunately, you know, as you were so sensitive to this issue at such a young age, it did have a big impact on you. And unfortunately, that happens even today.
I think I feel quite angry about it, actually, in hindsight, because at that age, I didn't think of questioning the status quo and trying to kind of fight to be able to continue in something. I just thought if I'm not willing to do it, I was told that I couldn't take the class. And so I gave up anything. And my dream really would have been to be a marine biologist or something. But I stopped taking biology at a very early age. So if you could just speak a bit about this idea of being complicit without knowing it's okay to question. I find that kind of fascinating.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. Although even at a young age, I did do dissections at some point I stopped, obviously. But the thing that bothered me about this was the reactions of my fellow students to the whole process, because it seemed to me that what this did was create a very callous, insensitive feeling around the class. It promoted callousness. It promoted cruelty. It promotes insensitivity. A lot of my fellow students made fun of the animals who were being dissected. They did things, you know, propped them up and did things that were disrespectful and really just treated them like a toy and laughed at them. And even at an early age, I knew that was wrong. And so, you know, if
it's fascinating, Laura.
Yeah.
It's so interesting you say that because it's reminding me, it's like an association of disgust that comes about with animals that they kind of inculcate into young minds. Because I remember seeing a pig in a jar and having this sort of feeling of revulsion, not necessarily directly for the animal, but an association of like formaldehyde and, you know, dead animal. And I think you're absolutely right. Like, this never occurred to me until I'm listening to you speak on this. But yeah, that's what that's doing.
It is. It creates, I think, you know, callousness that I'm not sure many parents would really want their children to be. I mean, I think it makes people callous towards, you know, all animals and including humans. And I think that it's just the start of a whole sort of inculcation into this, you know, the culture of, you know, you shouldn't care about other animals. You're going to eat them. You're going to cut them up. You're going to incarcerate them and so forth. And so, you know, you might as well start young, not caring about, you know, their plight in life or their feelings. It's really ugly. And I have to say, you know, recently in the past few years, there have been some courageous kids who have come out and said, nope, I'm not going to do this. And because of that, there are now laws in several states that say that your child cannot be forced to do this, to dissect an animal, that there must be an alternative for them so that they don't have to do what you did, which was give up or be forced out of science. They can be a scientist, but also be an ethical scientist.
So I think it's just very important that this information gets out there so students even know it's an option for them to continue on.
It is an option, and it's because many kids have spoken up. I know there's at least thinking about a dozen states, including California, where there are laws to protect students who do not want to dissect. And, you know, that's something that's really important. Unfortunately, it doesn't always carry over into college and graduate school. And as someone who, you know, worked at Emory, was a faculty member at Emory for 20 years, I saw a lot of students really impacted negatively by this notion that if you wanted to study science, you had to cut up animals.
Are there alternatives to dissecting animals for students in those cases?
Oh my gosh, there are tons of alternatives. There are all kinds of computer models. There's all kinds of programs, digital programs. One that comes to mind is the Digital Frog, which is, you know, a fully interactive program. You can dissect the Digital Frog. There's Cat Lab, all kinds of biological computer programs. And the thing about these programs, which people should know, is when you test students who learn through these interactive programs and compare that with what they learn when they're dissecting a real animal, the programs win. They actually learn more with the programs. And that's because it comes along with all kinds of extra information and simulations, and you can do it over and over again. So the idea that, you know, you have to cut up a frog or a pig or a rat to learn about biology is just false. You don't. In fact, you learn better the other way.
So are you telling me that you believe, or that it's not actually necessary to dissect in a student's career?
It is not only not necessary, but there is, it, and this has been shown through empirical studies, that you actually learn more using these computer methods, these computer programs that simulate. And also, and I have
would
to
that,
say,
Lori, would that apply also to medical students, like right up until getting your medical degree? Wow.
So I think it applies, obviously, with medical students and veterinary students. There does have to be a point when one does perfect one's methods on an actual body. So for medical school, for instance, they work on cadavers, and that's, you know, pretty critical. But leading up to that, there is absolutely no need to cut up dogs and cats. And I know in veterinary school now here in the United States, all but one or two now use some kind of robot or computer simulation. And there's no negative impact on the quality of their education or learning. They actually do very well. So, you know, if for those of you out there who are looking into, say, a veterinary school, you know, there are plenty out there in the United States where you don't have to dissect dogs and cats.
And I think this applies to live animals used in testing and research as well, because there are so many people out there that feel that, you know, all of that is necessary for biomedical research. But
yes,
the truth is there are a lot of alternatives, whether the animal is dead or whether the animal is alive and being used. And I think it's just really important that we spread the word about that and get that information out there.
Yeah, absolutely. It just blends right into the whole idea of vivisection, which is, you know, taking apart or anatomically manipulating a living being. And again, you know,
which goes on all the time, and it's very hidden in society and the mass scale that this is occurring at, even on animals like dogs and cats, is really shocking.
It is occurring more today than ever before. In terms of the numbers of animals, it seems that the more knowledge we get about things like genetics and other aspects of anatomy, physiology, the more we want to manipulate. And so our growing knowledge has actually produced more vivisection, not less. So we are really going in the wrong direction. Recently, there was a paper about heart transplant research, and what they're doing is they are manipulating, genetically creating pigs who then live for a very short while. They take their heart out and they plant the heart into a baboon or another primate. And that primate is allowed to live for perhaps a few months, and then they're killed, and they want to see how the pig heart does in a primate, so that perhaps, you know, they could take that pig heart and transplant it directly into a human.
It sounds like something out of Mary Shelley's Frankenstein.
Exactly, but that's what it is. And instead of trying to find ways to use our scientific know-how to help humans without causing suffering to other individuals, we're actually creating more suffering. So people really need to think about, you know, what's going on, because it's not getting better. It's getting worse.
Where are these animals housed and farmed and, you know, bred? It's so hidden in society. Is this occurring in university labs? Is this occurring on offsite locations?
All of it, actually. It's everywhere. And, you know, there are buildings in places, and you may not know what happens in that building, but it may be a breeding facility for mice and rats. You know, right now you can go to a catalog and order any kind of rat or mice that you want. That's how commercialized it has become. Animals are being bred for various diseases. There are monkeys being bred to have Parkinson's disease, all kinds of horrible diseases. And they are bred. They're brought into the world in order to be made sick and then killed.
I know in Canada, we have big problems with lab animals, in addition to farm animals, being exempt from animal cruelty laws. So essentially, any animal that is in that scenario is entirely at the mercy of the people who are experimenting on it.
Absolutely. There is some oversight in universities, but that oversight sets the bar pretty darn low. And in commercial and in other companies, for-profit companies, you know, there really is no, you know, not much oversight. There may be some, but again, the bar is set very low.
It's really fascinating how humans have a hierarchy of animals in terms of which ones we feel it's okay to hurt and which ones we feel deserve to be loved. And there's not even a direct correlation between, I mean, sometimes it's an evaluation of intelligence, but in the case of something like I hear you talking about pigs, that doesn't apply at all. So it just seems completely arbitrary and random, and something that most people don't even question.
Well, it is. And for instance, I think a lot of people may not give much thought to rodents, for instance, rats and mice. But in fact, rats are used in depression research. So when you think about that, if you can make a rat depressed, then they have a mind. They have a psychology. And if you want to test depression and depression drugs and manipulations on rats who get depressed, you have to deal with the fact that that is an individual who has a mind that does get depressed. It's a catch-22. You can't, you know, a rat makes a good model for depression because a rat can get depressed. People have to understand that. You know, they're not automatons. They're individuals with lives to lead and feelings.
Fascinating. How many students that dissect do you think actually end up going into the sciences?
A small percentage, a very small percentage, because when you think about it, most students in high school and junior high are told they have to dissect. And even in college, a lot of students who end up in biology 101, for instance, have to dissect, and they don't necessarily go on to a career in the sciences. So, you know, for a vast majority of students, this is just a, quote, fun thing to do. I'm going to cut up a pig or a rat or a sheep brain or a frog, and it's just the thing to do. And there's just absolutely no evidence that there's any enhancement of that child's education or life at all.
So it's just an utterly unnecessary waste of life.
Utterly unnecessary, and I think harmful, not just to the animals, but as an educator for 20 years, I can tell you from firsthand experience, it is harmful to the students as well.
That is fascinating, because that's when I set out to interview you, I'm thinking animals and animal welfare, not how this desensitizes human beings to other life and how that can even impact our treatment of each other.
It does. And I've seen it, and it hurts students. And a lot of students really don't want to do dissection and vivisection and this kind of thing and feel so pressured into it that it just makes them very upset, stressed, feeling like they don't have a choice. And they're told that by schools and universities, if you want to be a scientist, you have to do this, this, and this. And it's just not true. And I've seen the effects on university students when they're pushed into that corner.
It's really sad, because it's almost as if children just have an innate revulsion to hurting other creatures. And here we are desensitizing
exactly.
Our children to that.
Exactly. It's a whole process of desensitization so that, you know, by the time they get to college or graduate school, you know, they should question nothing. And that's very, very sad. And that's letting our kids down.
Is there a simple action a person can take to help the situation of dissection?
Well, I think there are a few things. One of the things is, if you have a school-aged child, ask them about dissection. Ask them, are you going to dissect an animal this year? And ask them how they feel about it. And then go to the school and ask them if there is an alternative, because in many schools, there is. There's not only an alternative, but there's protection, a legal protection for students who don't want to do this. And so as a parent, you need to, you know, be educated about what kinds of protections and options there are for your children in school. So question that. Question that. It is okay to question it. Don't just go along with the status quo. There's also a really good nonprofit organization called the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, PCRM.org. And it's run by a lot of physicians. You can go there and find information for yourself about dissection and vivisection and all of the different alternatives that are available.
And maybe people can also just go to their local government official if they want to know more about this or find out. And just to have more transparency in, you know, where these animals are coming from, how they're killed, how they're sourced.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, parents should know, you know, what their children are being asked to do. And that means everything from where these animals are coming from to, is it safe? Is it ethical? And is this going to cause my child psychological harm? And those are the things that parents need to be really careful about and demand information from, like you said, lawmakers, policymakers, and the schools themselves.
And I just kind of feel like as citizens, we have a responsibility to inquire about these kinds of hidden uses of animals.
Absolutely.
For the sake of animals.
Well, I think, you know, obviously people are very concerned about, you know, what would happen if I got sick or my child got sick, or and we need to have cures for diseases. And of course, that's really understandable. But at the same time, you know, we need to understand just what we're getting into as a society with some of these things, because I don't think most people really, really know, you know, what direction biomedical science is heading in. And I'm not sure that everyone would be comfortable with it. So it's a question forcing society into the alternatives. I mean, we don't have to test on animals, but we do. And it's up to citizens. It's up to us as consumers of treatment of everything, basically, to say, I don't want it to go that way. You've got to find another way.
Laurie, I can't thank you enough. That was absolutely fascinating. Thank you so much.
Thanks for asking me about all of this.